Downtown Theater costs $120 million. The cost for Orrin Hatch's new storage unit for his papers, $150 million. This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Is Anthony Weiner as careful with his email as he is with his text messages? I guess Hillary Clinton will find out soon. This is Dan McKay on the right.
Utah Republicans are stumping for Trump on Utah's Capitol Hill, and I'm disappointed. Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political right, and I have with me in the studio, representing the political left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning, Natalie. I just can feel the whole Trump-osis all across this state. Good morning.
Dan McKay's thinking I've just taken his job.
No, I'm going to be the center today. So you can be the right, I'll be the center.
Listen, I am happy to
be
the political right as long as I don't have to speak in defense of Donald Trump.
Nope, sorry. You can't. You got to take the whole deal or a whole enchilada or no enchilada.
Well, so this week on Tuesday, big Trump rally up at the Capitol. We had a lot of our elected officials there, and I must say I was disappointed to know that Senator Hatch, Representative Chris Stewart, Representative Rob Bishop, and Speaker Greg Hughes were there.
They all understand the importance of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And as I listen to all of them, that is the concern. And it is candidly where I think many conservatives, despite not loving anything about Donald Trump, is coming home to roost. And this is why I think I'm going to call it right now. I think it's over. I think Trump's going to win Utah pretty easily.
Yeah. Well, I think when that kind of happens, I don't think he does it easily, but I think he gets it. Jim?
You know, that bastion of greatness in the legislature, in Congress, who hasn't passed a bill yet, Chris Stewart, who called Donald Trump Mussolini, has now decided that he is endorsing and telling everybody to vote for Mussolini. I mean, this is pathetic. And next time Orrin Hatch sits back with one of those sanctimonious morality plays, I want him to go back and read what Donald Trump said about women and about children and say, come on, guys, have an ounce of morality and principle ahead of your own little party narrow needs. This is a dark, dark, dark week in the history of the state of Utah to see all of our elected officials up there rallying around this man who clearly is incompetent to be president. I mean, this is a sad day.
Dan,
that was dark to the third power.
Dan, are you thinking the Senate, the Republicans keep the Senate in this election?
Right now, again, going back to the pundits and everything else, they still say that the Democrats will take the Senate.
Is that the Utah Senate, or are we talking the one in Washington?
I'm talking the U.S.
one in Washington.
The one in Washington.
They're still saying that. And because, and I think that's an additional equation, right, as people are, because what I'm learning.
Well, to the Supreme Court thing, because
I'm a
conservative who doesn't want Trump and doesn't want the nominees of Hillary Clinton, but I think that there's a check and balance there, and the Senate gets to confirm.
You're doing the smart math, right? And I think this is the same calculus that a lot of people are starting to weigh, and they say, look, if we're going to lose the Senate, we have to keep the White House, and it really becomes about the Supreme Court. And I think that really it's a sad statement on the condition of our republic that our courts are really the most powerful legislative body, but that being said, that's where we are as a nation, and that's where we're looking for fairness and equity. And if you turn over that value, the conservative check that they've had for the last little while, you turn that over, there is that concern. And that's why I think Orrin's there and others.
Dan, I have a column in the paper this week where I say any presidential candidate who uses the word bimbo in a tweet loses my vote.
Mm. That's your deal breaker.
Well, there's a lot of deal breakers. But my point would be I have personal integrity before I'm worried about the Supreme Court. And that's, this is what I wished Senator Hatch and all these gentlemen had that are doing this. But we can't spend the whole program talking about Donald Trump.
Yeah, but how – so again, think about the larger picture of your values and say, which of your values do you get to care about the most? Because you really do have Solomon's problem when you're looking at this issue.
It's a tough one. This is such a...
We're very fortunate, though. We are going to be able to maintain both of our senators as Republicans in Utah.
Yeah.
So that's going to help a little bit of the balance, right? Right, Jim? Are you glad?
Look, can we talk for a moment
about
the qualifications to be president of the United States? I mean, these rationalizations, Donald Trump, by any measure, morally, intellectually, skill sets, is not qualified to be president. I mean, trust him with the nuclear codes? I wouldn't trust him with zip codes. This is a man who should not be president. How do we get to this point?
You can't trust him with your wife. You can't trust him with your daughter. You can't trust him with policies because we don't know what they are. You can't trust him to share his tax returns because he doesn't do it. What is it about him that is likable? Okay.
Must be the hair.
It's great hair.
Yeah, guys. All right. Well, let's do this. How about let's go to Evan McMullen. I mean, he's been getting time on CNN and, you know, and then this hits, the robocall from the white nationalist who supports Donald Trump, who essentially says all these terrible kind of, you know, political.
Did you listen to the
motivated
audio?
I read the script.
I listened to the audio. It's despicable.
Well, it's just, it's disgraceful to think that the things that are
in
there.
Do you want to hear it? It's 41 seconds. I have it here. No, we don't need to hear
well,
it.
I mean, but let's characterize it. I mean, essentially says, hey, this guy, his mother's married to another woman. He's 40-something years old. He must be a closeted homosexual.
Okay, so what's the bad part so far?
Well, it's disgraceful that they're using that for political means, right, in an election. Okay, Jim, react to that.
No, I don't see anything disgraceful about that. I mean, so he has two mothers, and
yeah,
so he might be gay. I mean, where's the disgraceful part?
The disgraceful part is that someone is using that narrative to try and hurt this person when it shouldn't matter.
Agreed.
These are loving people who love one another. End of subject. What are your policies?
Yeah, it does. Right, but...
Okay,
it
I
doesn't,
can live with that.
It does,
I mean, seriously,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
what
yeah.
I'm saying.
I mean,
I'm saying
look what
it's disgraceful because they're politicizing something that shouldn't be politicized.
In a low-information candidate, on a low-information ballot, scary things scare people away from voting for people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of tactics that, you know, Herbert is Trump. I mean, it's the same line. Sorry, just giving Jim a hard time because we know it's his people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably Jim, actually. But it's
four
these
in the
kinds
morning
of, it's
with
kind
his
of these,
staple gun putting up the posters.
It's these kinds of things that we dislike about the retail side of politics. Now, I got to explain. Natalie's arguing, making an argument for policy-based politics and policy-based discussion. And then there's the retail side of politics. Do you really get to know a candidate by looking at their 8.5 by 11, you know, poster cards that they sent you in the mail?
You get to know them from a robocall.
It's glossy. A robocall of 41 seconds. You don't get to know any of that stuff, but a lot of people do make decisions based on that information and that information alone. And that level is what I think all three of us would say
is
not good
enough. Let's say McMullen, 98% of his vote is LDS would be my guess. You know, maybe
it's
90,
high.
But
yeah,
it's going to be very high. So what's interesting to me is, are LDS people going to buy this? Are they going to be, not the white supremacist LDS portion, but normal people living in Draper, living in West Jordan, living in Ephraim, are they going to say, wait a minute, he's got two moms? I mean, is this going to work?
I don't think so.
Is there enough bias? Wait a minute, maybe he is gay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to vote for him. Remember, it's a 2-3% race. It might well be. Is it going to work?
Yeah. I don't think it will. Dan, you?
Yeah, I don't think it will. But I just don't see Evan McMullen winning the state of Utah.
Yeah. Hey,
And Adams, you know, or Nate Silver on 538politics.com, his big prediction is that Evan would need a real change in the tide to see that type of thing happen.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
Yeah. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I am joined by Representative Dan McKay on the right Senator Jim DeBacchus on the left. In our next segment, we'll talk about the leaked debate questions to the Hillary Clinton campaign.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. Dan, I want to hear your comments on this. Donna Brazile, most people know her as a longtime, you know, leader in the Democratic Party, a commentator on CNN, often has purple hair, but she's a lovely, lovely woman. And she, you know, is allegedly leaked a debate question to the Clinton campaign.
Not a question.
But multiple questions.
Yeah, all of them.
All of them. Okay. I stand corrected. What do you make of this? This is not the Donna Brazile that I've come to respect.
Or maybe the one you came to respect is not really the Donna Brazile you know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and
I don't know her, really. I just watch her and think, oh, she's reasonable.
Look, if you don't want to take WikiLeaks into or any of these email leaks or any of the things, if you don't want to take it into consideration for your ballot, I get it. But what is very fascinating about them is you get to see how government is actually run, especially on the national level. Is there these emails or some of this innuendo, mm-hmm. some of this stuff goes around, and things get traded around, and everybody's no worse for wear, right?
Yeah.
I look at Donna Brazile, and I say, everybody's like, well, how can she give out the debate questions? I'm like, I'm surprised they didn't both have it.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody has somebody that's pulling for them, no matter what team it is. And so
that's
I was disappointed.
Just really bad judgment.
I can always tell behind the scenes. You guys can't see this, but I need to not make eye contact with Natalie when I want to finish my point because she's always ready for me to be done. I love her to death. She was ready for me to be done with my daughter.
No, she moves us right along, Dan.
Well. My deal is you're kind of saying, hey, you know, this is what happens in the national level, and I'm one of those who says, well, it doesn't have to be that way, and that's not how I choose to conduct myself. And a lot of people I know on the national level didn't conduct themselves that way. Jim, make your defense from the left.
It was one question, apparently. It was.
Okay,
I can even tell you. I can even tell you the question.
It's tough in the Political
Center
story.
So look,
is it the one that led to Trumped up, trickle down?
No, it had to do with water and Flint. So the question is: does anybody in CNN's office or on set think that Donna Brazile is not a partisan? I mean, is she there as a news commentator? Is she there to be a journalist?
She's not there to be independent.
So she hears some gossip. She hears something around the newsroom. What is her sworn duty? I mean, if you see the signals of your opponent at the football game on the coach on the sidelines and you yell down, it's going to be a pass, going to be a pass, is that immoral? I don't know. I mean, I think it's the kind of team player kind of thing.
Really? You don't know?
Hey,
you don't know.
I'm sticking with that until now, and now I'm rethinking it.
for usually the true north pointing compass of ethics, I am a little surprised. But I will say, to wrap this up.
I'm not cutting you off.
I just look at it and I think I do expect that. If you've got an employer, you've got a duty to that employer.
Yeah.
And if there's information moving around the inside of that employer that inconveniences your friends, I think you have to let your friends be inconvenienced when it finally hits. That's how insider trading gets in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
You go down the list of all the fraud and other issues that come as a result of leaked information, and this is just it. But it's just presidential stock, so who cares?
Well, I want to give a personal example here, because what you're kind of saying is that people in the political inside learn things, or the journalistic inside, and they share them whether they should or shouldn't.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that's not totally been my experience. So I want to give you a good example. When Governor Huntsman resigned, that is something that I think I knew maybe 2.5 weeks before he announced. And it was because they reached out to the Levitt world to learn about what it's like when you resign from governorship and how does that happen. And it dealt with, you know, Washington and a confirmation thing and whatnot. And so I was sworn to be careful and quiet and had a state duty to do that.
Yeah.
And that's been my experience, that people I've known, at least locally in state government, can be – at least the good people are really careful about information that they should keep close.
And everybody's always telling me all the time, whatever you do, don't tell Jim to back. and I got to be honest, I keep that pretty close.
Little do they know.
My point in bringing that up is that that's not always the case. The degree that Donna slipped something, I mean, I just think it was a terrible lack of judgment.
It's not, you guys, this is not a government secret. This is in a newsroom, and she's a partisan, and she hears something. If you go to a press conference and you hear two people talking next to you, and there's some interesting information in a political race, are you under the same moral prohibition when you're working for the state and you get some kind of government secret? I just don't see an equivalency.
See,
there.
My
deal.
Problem is I have to walk this line all the time.
Yeah.
In my professional life. So where as an attorney, I get to know things, and just because I know them doesn't mean everybody
yeah.
else does.
Yeah.
See, and I never walk that
line. And same thing
when
I'm complaining with the state. I have to keep those worlds separate all the time.
You
so
learn
I'm kind
things.
Of with Natalie. You have to.
Yeah, it's a mark of your professionalism.
It should be.
Okay, Utah voters. We have mail-in ballots this year.
Go vote.
They're saying, the county clerks are saying, we're not getting the uptick that we were expecting. And there's a lot of concern that this low early submission could mean delays in election night. In other words, there's fewer places to go vote in person, so long lines.
Yeah, wonderful job by the state, you know, the best managed state. They made some projections that, you know what, we're going to get 72% of our voting done this way. Let's close down hundreds and hundreds of voting places. You got a governor and a legislature here that were snoozing on the job and didn't put the kind of money into to voting polling places that they should have. So as you're voting and you look at those, what used to be 600 polls statewide now, places to vote, that are down to double-digit figures or somewhere around that number, you remember as you vote for governor who planned all this as you're waiting in line for hours and hours. This
Dan,
was
who
wrong.
Who planned all this?
This is the county clerk.
That's what I was going to say.
And this is sitting in their lap squarely, right? Because at their request, these things were done so that they could make the changes and make it possible for vote by mail. And this is all part of the, as a state, we are trying to do everything we can to do voter outreach and get more people involved. And the research has shown that those who receive a mail-in ballot are more likely to return it. That just hasn't proven the case early. And I think that might be a lot of factors. But one is the presidential race. It seems like there's a new dumpster fire in the presidential race every day.
Yeah.
And as I talk to people, that is the one race that everyone is trying to figure out. All the rest of the down ballot races, they've got them figured out or they've got the bubbles filled in. They're just holding out for the last second to fill in that presidential ballot. But I'm worried that they won't get them in by the 7th. And then they'll want to go and hurry and vote for the president, and they're going to show up at the ballot location, and their old ballot location is going to be closed. So then they've got to go online and try and find the polling location that, by the way, is engineered to only help people who have misplaced their mail-in ballot. So if you show up there, they're going to have some long lines wrapped around the buildings on November 8th, especially here in Salt Lake
County.
And
you're going to head home to do something else. And
the fear is people aren't going to show up.
You said something interesting, Dan, and I want to make sure I understand this right. You cannot mail in your ballot on Election Day.
You cannot.
You're not. It's not going to count.
It will not count. If it is postmarked November 8th, it will not count.
And that costs a guy a house seat, right?
Potentially. I mean, we never counted those ballots, so we don't know. But the idea is you have got to have a postmark. So especially all the rural listeners that we have, make sure, you know, if you're in the city here, reach out to your rural friends. Let them know if their postmark, if their post office doesn't postmark, that's a problem. They need to make sure that their post office actually has a postmark. Because for some people in the rural areas, they've got to have their ballot mailed on November 6th so it can get to the Salt Lake post office and be postmarked by the 7th so that it can be counted on the 8th.
Yeah. Seems like this needs some fine tuning, Dan.
Oh,
just saying
boy,
to the majority party.
They didn't put the money forward.
I think Jim gave a heartfelt, passionate speech pleading for vote by mail, and this is a little bit of a surprise.
I'm for, but I don't think we should have cut all of the.
We didn't either.
Sherry Swenson did it.
No, it was Sherry Swenson and the clerks in what they felt was a higher Democratic turnout because Republicans, especially in Salt Lake County, have worked like crazy to register Republicans to vote by mail. Our people were already registered to vote by mail, Jim. We didn't need it.
No, clerks.
It was your folks.
Who appropriates money? Clerks or the legislature?
Yeah.
So it was the legislature that cut all the money for all those things.
Upon request, we do a lot of
things. The best thing is send in your ballot, find it, do it, mail it.
And if there's a long line, don't vote Republican because they cut the money.
I hate to leave a national exciting election issue like that and go back to Washington, but I just feel like in fairness we need to talk about FBI Director James Comey, and I think we need to use the term Anthony Weiner on this program.
But, just looking for an excuse to get Weiners on the program.
Well, I feel like we've spent so much time taking on Donald Trump, and then you have this situation, and we should talk about it. So, Dan, the time's yours. What do you want to say about the FBI director and this October surprise the way it's kind of changed the election?
I feel bad for Comey. Okay. I got to be honest. I just look at – there's no – I'm sure he's sitting in his office. He knows there is no winning.
Uh-huh.
Regardless of what happens on this issue, there's no winning. And I've read, you know, some of the online reports have said, look, he had – after the last time when they decided they weren't going to prosecute Secretary Clinton, they said – there were mass resignations. Okay. I mean, literally agents stepping down because they said, look, if you're not going to prosecute the highest, are we really running a banner republic?
You've just undercut us.
Yeah. You've undercut what we're really doing here. And so there were resignations. So he looked at it that time. And now as this new stuff was coming to light, he was stuck with, well, am I going to give a pass again or am I going to give people notice? And I think he chose the notice. But boy, has he seen the backside of a firefighter like crazy. I mean, this has been rough.
Yeah. Director Comey. Jim, your thoughts?
Tough position, but here's, I suppose, ultimately what he had to decide. Am I going to protect myself and the agency from all the stuff that would come after the election if I didn't say these things were out there? And he decided, I'm going to protect my own reputation and perhaps that of the FBI, and I'm going to throw this stuff out, even if it throws the election into anarchy and chaos, and even if it's violating every DOJ policy there is. And so now we have emails, remember, that he's never seen, that didn't belong to Hillary Clinton, and he says, well, maybe, or probably, or might, or could, and our whole election process is tainted. He should have just taken the bullet and said, you know what, it's not right, I'm going to stick with the policy and do it. And he decided not to. He deserves what's happening.
I do love that it was Anthony Weiner, because
we got his name twice on the program.
15
now.
Minutes weren't up, you know, as
I
congressman
know, I
his
know.
15 minutes weren't
just
up and he just
away.
Had to get the last 30 seconds in. And I love that it's this way.
It's the gift that keeps giving.
Poor Hillary. Her life is run by these men with sex problems. Yeah. You know, one after another, they're affecting her life.
Jim, we need to go to gripes. But before we do that, I want you to just let's talk about Jason Chaffetz for just a minute and his latest activities. He was quoted in the Washington Post using the term pre-impeachment. Am I getting that right?
You know, he's saying he just can't. He's head of a big operations or government investigations. And he says, I have 2 to 4 years worth of things. You know what, Jason? That's not what America wants. Whoever wakes up as president on Wednesday morning, we ought to make. If it's Donald Trump, I'm going to swallow hard and I'm going to say, President Trump, what can I do to help you be successful? We've for 8 years said we want Barack Obama to be a failure, even if it's bad for America. We cannot survive another 4 or 8 years of that kind of attitude. Jason ought to be ashamed of himself. Let's give it a try this time. Yeah. Let's not go in
for
failure. So you're
saying before the election, he's already saying, I've got all this stuff ready to fire at her.
Exactly.
Yeah. Dan, any quick comment on that?
No.
All right.
Jason and I are hosting a joint election celebration meeting at Chuck E. Cheese, so probably
what a place.
Comment.
What
time?
A place.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. I was going. I love that.
After
Chuck
his comment in the trib, I just thought that was a funny deal.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, you ready for gripes?
Totally.
Let's hear it.
Apple Computer, what have you done to me? So they have their big unveil of the latest laptop, and that was, you know, just the other day, I guess last week. They have this big unveil of what they're going to do. It's the next generation of computing, and they come out with a new silver laptop with keys and buttons and interface. It's and a slider
a little
thing
touch
up
screen.
Here that's so gimmicky. And the day before it, Microsoft comes out with this whiz-bang desktop that looks phenomenal, and it's going to be cool for designers and like this. So with a little techie in me who absolutely worships at the throne of Apple computers, is really, really
Steve
disappointed
Jobs. You're
in
missing Jobs.
Apple completely falling off its innovation cycle. I'm bummed.
Jim, that's a great gripe, Dan.
I like that gripe. I love that fiscal conservative Orrin Hatch And Scott Anderson from Zions are going to raise between $100 and $150 million for a hatch center to house Orrin's office papers. Okay, because the Senators had an archivist for 15 years now working to catalog his stuff. But we're, you know, to be remembered, Orrin could actually do his job and vote for a ninth Supreme Court justice. That's a way you could be remembered, Senator Hatch. That's my gripe.
Oh, it's hard to be on the right and have Jim go because you always want to take on his gripe. And I'm so thrilled that Senator Hatch has all these organized materials. He's going to help us, you know, write history. Yeah. And he's our senator, and I want it to happen. But I have another gripe, and just a tiny bit of time. I'm so frustrated at how divided this country is. And I saw a poll the other day. It's a poll that's been around a long time, but it deals with the Affordable Care Act from the minute it was passed, how public perception is on it. And it just you know, stood right there at about the 50-50 mark the entire time. People hate it. People love it. We are so divided as a country. And I think until we fix that, we're going to have this big gaping wound. That's my gripe.
Festering.
Oozing. Stinky. Needing help. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Jim Debakis and Dan McKay. The program's produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.